From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2003 when two men began work on a musical. They were not veterans of the theater. In fact, Trey Parker and Matt Stone had never been connected to anything on Broadway or just about any other stage that hosts live performance. Parker and Stone were known as the creators of South Park, the Comedy Central cartoon. They had made movies, but never a Broadway musical. Well, their work went 7 years as they wrote the show that has become one of the hottest draws in theater in the world. It's called The Book of Mormon. Tells the story of two young Mormon missionaries while taking an irreverent look at religion in general. The surprise is that when it opened in 2011, critics said it was good, great even. The Washington Post saying it restored faith in the American musical. And now it will be back in Rochester in just a few minutes. We'll hear from one of the stars, but joining us here in studio this hour is Albert Nocciolino, the presenter for RBTL. And really, frankly, I've been telling people I don't know what you do to get the Book of Mormon to Rochester when it's in demand all over the world, but you're really the reason some of these great shows come.
That's very kind. We're so fortunate to have a wonderful relationship with the producers who recognize that first year of the tour, Rochester was pretty special to the show itself, considering Palmyra's right down the road. And of course, they even mentioned Rochester in the production. But yes, we were excited about it, and it sold out, you know, literally in minutes.
I know it did last year. How about this year?
This year were 2 weeks. Last year it was actually a year and a half ago.
Yeah, right. March of 2013, I think.
Right,
yeah.
And we did 1 week then, and this is 2 weeks. So we're not sold out yet, but selling very well, and show opens in a couple of weeks. So we're looking forward to another very successful engagement,
too. We're going to look at the whole schedule here with Albert, because it's so nice for me to be able to sit down with a little time and maybe even probe your own career, because I don't know how you do everything you do. But let me ask you, on Book of Mormon, why is it on fire the way it is? Why does it work?
Your introduction was perfect. You mentioned the quotes from the various the Washington Post. I think the New York Times called it the best musical of the century. I mean, not the decade, not the last 5 years, last 20 years. It is structurally, you've seen the show. Have you seen the show?
Oh, yes.
Structurally.
I went to the Rochester
right.
performance.
It's just a classic Broadway musical. Great book, great music, great dancing, a terrific, terrific show. Inside it is clever. It's smart. It appeals to different generations. And it's just one of those incredible shows that just resonates. And look, it's still selling out on Broadway every day, every night, and around the country. So, and I think it introduced a lot of people to the theater who had never gone to the theater before.
We're going to be hearing clips from The Book of Mormon, some of the ones that are inbounds that we can play, along with clips from some other shows on the Broadway League season. My engineer's looking at me and smiling, probably wondering, what did you pull? What were you able to pull and not pull? Because, yes, if you have seen the show, or maybe if you've just heard of the show, it pushes the lines of comfort at times, probably by design, if you know Trey Parker and Matt Stone. And Albert, I'm sure there are some people who have walked out of the show if they don't know what to expect.
Well, I have to be honest with you. Our experience was the opposite. We didn't have anybody leave. What Book of Mormon does is they're also very smart about the way they present the show. Everybody knows what the show's about before they come. We share information about the show with our subscribers, with our single ticket buyers. They're right up front on the ticket about some of the language that's used, explicit language is on the ticket. So they're not hiding what content might potentially be offensive to some people. But because we did all the education that they helped us with and provided us with, everybody had a great experience.
I also think, and maybe I'm being overly generous to Trey and Matt, but I think there is a sweetness that is underlying, because the show, it pokes fun at some of the what probably Trey Parker and Matt Stone would say are the more interesting beliefs in certain belief systems, but it also seems to alight upon this message of how can you fault someone for having belief? Isn't there something powerful and important?
Exactly. It's okay to have faith. It's okay to go wherever you want to and believe in what. I mean, that's exactly what they say. They say that's the message that's delivered. I totally agree.
Yeah, and it also, as much as I really credit also the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, because they have been really, I would say, patient and constructive, and they try to educate people. But I don't think the show's an attack on the
No, not at all. I think there's a perception because of the title and when people hear about the show that there is. But it's not at all. In fact, quick story, we're presenting the show in Buffalo, and these young men were out in front of the theater after the show handing out leaflets about their faith, about being a Mormon. Mm-hmm. And we were having a little cast party, and some of the cast members went outside and invited the young men in, and they came and enjoyed the company. And came into the party, and they, you know, there's just was this wonderful dialogue and conversation with them. So, you know, they get it.
Yeah,
get it.
Part of the show does poke fun a little bit at just how nice and pure Mormons are. And if that's the worst thing you can say, you know, I mean, I feel like,
right.
You know, there are worse things about humankind than being really nice and maybe naive. You
right,
know, it's,
right.
It's very interesting. We're going to, we have a chance to talk to one of the members of the cast, and I want to bring in Cody Jameson Strand, who plays Elder Cunningham, who's taken the time to join us now. Cody, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good. I should have said, hello, my name is Evan Dawson, and I would like to share with you the most amazing show. Is that that's all you're going to get from me, and I'm really sorry about that.
No, that was good. That was good.
Well,
yeah, we have auditions next week.
I don't think we need that. We do have one clip to play because we're going to have some fun this hour as we look at the different shows that the Rochester Broadway Theater League are bringing to town. We've got a clip from the Book of Mormon, and it opens with this. I love the opening number. It's called Hello. Let's listen to part of that number, and then we'll come back and talk to Cody.
Eternal light. Sound good. Eternal light.
With Jesus Christ.
It's super fun.
Hello.
And if you let us in, we'll show you how it can be done.
No thanks.
Change religions, have a free book written by Jesus.
No, no, Elder Cunningham. That's not how we do it. You're making things up again. Just stick to the approved dialogue.
Hello,
hello.
My name is
Elder Cunningham.
And we would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
Hello.
Hello.
Just take this book. It's free.
All right, so there's a clip from Hello at the opening number, and the Elder Cunningham you just heard is on the line with us, Cody Jameson Strand. We're excited to have you here, and I was there in 2013 for the Rochester performance. I know it's going to be packed for the 2014 performances. How has it been being part of a show that is maybe the hottest theater performing show in the world right now, Cody?
It is absolutely insane. I feel very lucky, very fortunate, you know, because everywhere we go, people just are dying to see it, and it's really fun to get that energy, like, in every city I've been to.
Well, do you get the sense that the audience now knows what to expect? I mean, we were just talking to Albert Nocciolino about that, and it's kind of like once in a while you'll have part of an audience that doesn't quite know what to expect, but I think by now the secret's out.
Yeah, I would say that by now the secret's out, definitely. But every once in a while, my favorite part of being in the show is, like, being able to hear an audience response to some of the crazier moments that happened, like the song Hasta Diga Ibawai,
yes,
for example. Yes,
yes.
Like, and just hearing suddenly the, and, like, I think it's one of the most, you know, my favorite moments of being in the show. It's just hearing people's reaction to the crazy. But, you know, now when they see from the creators of South Park, they sort of know, oh, yeah, it really is, you know, straight off of an episode. So they know what to expect.
And what's really interesting now is, again, the show is 3-4 years old now, but it sort of already has a legacy of really great performances. How much do you look at the Josh Gads of the world and say, I'm going to do this role my way or exactly the way it's been sort of put together already? I mean, how much do you watch what other people have done with it?
I've seen pretty much everyone do it, and, like, that is, like, doing it now, for example. Like, I saw Josh. I saw the original production on Broadway. I was blown away when I saw it. But I'm not, you know, I'm not going to go out there and try and do a poor man's Josh Gad either. So it's sort of like, everyone sort of does their own thing, and the beauty of the show is that it has versatility in that factor, and you can get away with it. It works.
We're talking to Cody Jameson Strand, who plays Elder Cunningham in the coming Book of Mormon to Rochester with the Rochester Broadway Theater League season. And, Cody, on that point, interestingly enough, when we saw the performance in Rochester, I had seen some clips of Josh Gad and the way he did Hasidiga Ibawai, which I don't even fully know if I'm allowed to say on the radio given the meaning, but anyway, but the Elder Cunningham who came here was actually doing the worm to it. I mean, doing these dance moves to it that were, everybody has a bit of a different spin, and there is a little bit of room to have fun, I would think, in the role.
Oh, yeah. I've been with the show for almost 2 years now, and I haven't stopped having fun at all, you know.
It's huge in London as well, I've heard, and I don't know exactly where else it has been, but have you got the sense that the momentum has even slowed down at all for this show?
Not at all. I mean, there are two tours happening right now. New York is still the hottest ticket in town.
Right.
And, you know, in London, it just won a bunch of Olivier Awards this last year. So it's still, the momentum, I would say, is still growing.
And Cody, the music, I think what shocks a lot of people, if they do know a lot about the creation of this musical, is that the music is so good. I mean, when you hear that it's Trey Parker and Matt Stone, and that's sort of what you know, I think it catches people off guard just how good the song and dance numbers are. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think it was very smart of them that they teamed up with Robert Lopez, who did all the music for the Disney movie Frozen that's exploding now. So, I mean, they teamed up with him, and with their amazing lyrics and, you know, flair for musical theater and his amazing songwriting ability, they came up with just blockbuster after blockbuster songs.
They are so good. I bet you it was a month after I saw Book of Mormon last year that I was walking down the street, and I had left the interior light on in my car, and I went back to it, and I actually went, turn it off, like lights. I mean, like, it was still 4 weeks later. It caught me off guard that it was still in my head. Now, the music really, really is good. Okay, before we let you go here, if you can go back to the first time you saw this show, what did you enjoy the most about the show?
I think what I enjoyed the most is because I knew that it was written by Matt Stone and Trey Parker, and I knew that I was expecting, like, crazy things to happen. But I think what I loved most about it, and what I don't think people are expecting, is the level of heart and compassion that is actually in the show. People aren't expecting to be moved a little bit, and that it actually has a very good message to say.
I couldn't agree more. That's what we walked out of there with, and I don't think that's being too generous to the show. I think that's
yeah.
Right. By the way, do Trey and Matt just? I mean, they're so busy. They're sort of like legendarily busy. But do they check in on their traveling shows, or are they just kicking their feet up and laughing to the bank on this? I mean, they've done such an amazing job.
Oh no, we actually see them. We see them probably a few times a year. They'll come out and make sure everything's running smoothly. Yeah.
Wow.
Really cool guys.
Yeah. I have no idea how they have the time.
Absolutely starstruck.
Cody Jameson Strand plays Elder Cunningham in The Book of Mormon, and we can't wait to see you here. I know you're busy as well. Thank you for taking a few minutes for us to come on the program here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a blast.
All right, Cody. Cody's going to be here. And what do you think, Albert? I mean, so much of what he said echoes what you say about the show, the heart of the show.
No question about it. He nailed it. And he also, you know, brought in Bobby Lopez and Casey Nicolau directed. And, you know, so they were very smart to bring veteran Broadway creative people and team to the show. And it's reflective in what we see on stage.
He talked about how it's done around the world. Sometimes shows have especially if it's Trey Parker and Matt Stone, you don't know if it's going to play in London. And
right.
This is really planned.
It's a huge hit in London. It's a big, big hit in London. And he's right on exactly about Broadway. It is still, you know, 3 years later, with other shows having won the Tony Award, Book of Mormon is still the hottest show on Broadway. And it's for a reason. It's for a great reason. And these two companies touring and doing the same kind of business that these other two shows are, yeah.
My guest is Albert Nocciolino, presenter for the Rochester Broadway Theater League. And what did you do to get it twice now? I mean, like when you got the Book of Mormon once last year, that was great. But they can go anywhere, and again, they are in demand.
Yeah, I think the best story is the first time where they were so generous about including. I mean, the show could go anywhere and played multiple week engagements where they went. We were a 1 week engagement. And they were kind enough to give it to us here in Rochester and also in Buffalo where we present. I think the that for me was extraordinarily special. Again, they had the sensitivity, I think, to wanting to play this market, and we benefited from that. But we have a terrific relationship with the producing team. We were early on, got a chance to spend some time with Scott Rudin and the other producers, Ann and everybody, and we just fell in love with the show at the beginning, and they fell in love with us, I hope, and came here, and we delivered. And of course, now it's going everywhere and starting to repeat in other markets now.
Tickets still available for the Book of Mormon on this run. It's a two-week run. Before we get to the other shows, if you hear about any shows you want to see, where do people get tickets?
Well, they can do several things. They can go right to the box office at the Auditorium Theater, or they can call 222-5000, which they can buy online. Albert, on the phone or online as well.
Very good. Albert Nocciolino is here, and we're going to go down the list of some of the others. Mark on Twitter says, "It's so great to have Book of Mormon back. They should be performing in a brand new performing arts center, shouldn't they? Now, look, hold on.
We can go there.
To be fair here, and let me tell the audience sort of how the host works on this show. I don't bring a guest on and ambush them with questions like that. Mark brings that up, and all I will say about that, Albert, is we've had conversations with Arnie Rothschild on this program,
right,
with Mayor Lovely Warren and others. I know it's an ongoing community debate. There is a segment of the population that may say, you're able to get the great shows already. Does that say that we've got the facilities?
Yeah, that would be a fair response. How I would respond is that those patrons deserve the kind of venue that is up to the times and something that provides the kind of amenities and the comfort and will allow us to do other things with different spaces and provide better experience for all of them as well. A new theater brings a whole bunch of opportunities for us that I don't think, unless you're in the business, you understand. And putting one in the heart of the urban core, and we don't want to get into all of this now, would just manifest itself and resonate, and a lot of other things would happen as a result. But yes, I mean, that would be a good response, but I would then be able to say, look, here's the other things that can happen.
When you're negotiating to bring shows to town, how often does the facility come up?
It depends on the show. It depends on the show. It depends on the size of the show, the magnitude. You know, there's some of these shows that have 20, 25 tractor trailers, and, you know, sometimes we're tight. And that would be part of the dialogue that I would help explain. Because you need, for instance, in Buffalo, when they did the renovation, they blew out the back wall and made more dressing rooms and spent millions of dollars. Those are the kinds of things that have to happen to accommodate the shows physically. But a new theater would benefit everybody, would just benefit everybody.
Can I tell you what Arnie Rothschild said on this program about you?
Okay.
He said, Albert Nocciolino is a great man who is in good health, and I'm worried that if lightning struck him tomorrow, we wouldn't be able to get these shows anymore because he's the glue that's doing it, and we otherwise don't have a good enough claim on the shows. Now, that's a very nice compliment to you,
yeah,
but is there a chance that we'll start to lose the opportunity to bring some of the top-shelf shows?
First of all, that's very generous of Arnie. I think he's referring to my producing relationships and other things that I do in New York that help us bring shows here, which has obviously merit. I think what that means to me is I sometimes have the ability to get shows who normally might not come here. They put in a new theater and provide more seats and a better experience for the patrons, which means more business. That could go on without me, and I think that's what the message is.
Albert Nocciolino is here, and let's start going down the list here of what else is coming here. The Book of Mormon is coming October 7th through the 19th, so it's coming.
That's correct, right around the corner. Yep.
It'll be here soon, and then we should be chronological. And
okay.
I've got a clip. It was interesting trying to pull music from some of these musicals, because sometimes you can pull it from sort of currently existing shows, and sometimes you have to go to other sources.
Sure.
And with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, what better source than Donny Osmond? So let's listen to Joseph. Here's a clip from a show that's coming in November. That's Joseph. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Any Dream Will Do, Dave. Our engineer doesn't know it.
The light is dimming, and the dream is too. The world and I, we are still waiting, still hesitating.
Our engineer, Dave Campo, apparently didn't know that Any Dream Will Do is Joseph, but he's going to get tickets now. He's a huge Donny Osmond fan. He's a big fan of Guyliner, which Donny wore a lot of. What, if you haven't seen Joseph, is it still a magical show to you?
Yeah, it's a magical show. And what's one, first of all, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, who created this show way back when, a whole bunch of years ago. And it's still, you know, is fresh and resonates like it did from the beginning. A show that many, many high schools do as one of their productions because it's such a great and fun show, and it allows a lot of participation. You know, it's 11 brothers and everything else. This show is directed with a fresh new approach by Andy Blankenbuehler, Tony Award-winning director. And we have Ace Young and Diana DeGarmo in it, who are now married, from American Idol fame, and also from, they both worked on Broadway in Grease and Hair and Hairspray. So they bring a whole new approach to the show. So it's kind of a fresh, contemporary, you know, really hot show, with all these songs that everybody remembers and knows. And Donny Osmond, this was, this was a lifeblood for him for a long time.
Yes,
but more importantly, it's a family show. It really appeals to a lot of people. And you can bring your children to see the show. It's a great story and great music, and I think we'll be pleasantly surprised.
Ace Young and Diana DeGarmo, and people will wonder, can you translate from American Idol stage to live theater?
Well, that's, a really good question, and some can.
Probably not all can.
No. Well, first of all, they're not actors, and they need training or have had some. But with them, they, before they did Joseph, they, as I just mentioned, they were on Broadway and did three or four shows, did a couple together, actually. And so this was a natural fit. They were so, by the way, they're extraordinarily generous about their being in the show and touring America. They will do anything when they come to town. They just love being in the show, love working together, love the company. I happen to be involved with the producing side of it as well, so I got a chance to be to live through the auditions and the rehearsals, and we're having a lot of fun with the show.
How often are you producing these days?
Well, I think it depends from year to year, with what opportunities come along. And to be quite honest, sometimes my producing would be as simple as investing in a show or raising money in a show, which has, of course, become part of the equation with the cost of producing a show these days. Oftentimes, I get the luxury of being involved right from the very beginning, where I get to see a score, a piano score that Cyndi Lauper did before any orchestrations were done to it, or Harvey's book, and get to read the script and get to participate in the early parts of a show. So it varies depending on when I get involved. But every year, I am involved, either individually or as part of a group that I'm involved with, made up of presenters around the country, which we call the Independent Presenters Network. And we're involved with you know, several shows over the course of a year.
You've even had some awards for yourself over the years.
I have, yes.
he's again going, he didn't come here to talk about him, but Albert, 2013 Tony for Best Musical for Kinky Boots on Broadway as a co-producer.
Right. That was part of what the group that I worked with and was involved in the beginning, and we were fortunate enough to receive a Tony Award for it, yeah.
I have not seen Kinky Boots.
We can go right to Kinky Boots right now, if you want. We want to go in chronological order, or we can go right to Kinky Boots.
Well, since I don't have a clip from it, let's just jump right to it. That's actually, does it close the season?
It does close the season.
May 12th through the 17th, 1 week, Kinky Boots in 2015.
Right. I think what's, again, important about this story is it's the first year of the tour. It's a show that's selling out on Broadway right now. They, you know, can go anywhere they need to, they want to go around the country, and we will be part of the first year with this tour. Fortunately, because I'm involved, this is first of all based on a movie. I'm not sure many people realize that Kinky Boots was a movie based on a true story. Cyndi Lauper wrote the score. She grew up, she'll tell you that she grew up listening to Broadway tunes on Saturday morning while they're cleaning the house with her mother, you know. And Harvey Fierstein wrote the book, and Jerry Mitchell directed and choreographed. So it's when I first heard the score, I thought, wow, this is so fresh, so new, so contemporary, and I thought, I love it. I'm not a musician. It just resonated with me, and then of course the rest is history. It went on, And Jerry did a great job, and Harvey with the book, creating a beautiful musical that's a lot of fun. Talk about having heart. I mean, it jumps across the stage while you're watching it at the same time as you're laughing and enjoying the music. So,
and what's a short plot synopsis?
The short plot is a father has a shoe factory and wants his son to run it, but the shoe factory is dying because shoes are being made everywhere else but in their shoe factory. And the employees are going to lose their job, and he really doesn't want anything to do with it. But he goes out one night with one of his employees, and this is the short version, and they go to a club, and they meet Lola. And they come up with this idea to save the shoe factory. They'll make Kinky Boots. And Kinky Boots saves the factory with a lot of resistance initially from the employees. And Lola and her team come in to help design the boots. And from there, you get this beautiful musical. And you get a message that says, you know, I am who I am, and I can be who I want to be. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Every time you see a big name involved, I mean, big name, more mainstream, a mainstream pop name, Cyndi Lauper, you wonder just how big a part of a process they are as it goes on. What about her?
Unbelievable.
Yeah?
I remember somebody telling me they went to one of the previews, and they were sitting next to this lady, and she was, you know, taking notes, and she had her phone out, and the lady at intermission said, you know, what are you doing? The show's going on. And it was Cyndi. She was sitting there watching the show, listening to the show. It was previews where you get a chance to do all those things that they do, which is fix the show, make it as good as possible. And, you know, and she apologized to this lady. And then the lady afterwards realized it was Cyndi Lauper. I was like, oh, my God. So they're very involved. And from what I understand, Jerry said this and Harvey said this, that they would go to her and say, that song's not working, Cyndi. We got to fix it. And she'd go back to the room and rewrite a song or write another song. And she just kept doing it. And then, you know, then she'll say, but that melody works. And they said, but this is a Broadway show. So they were all willing to share all those stories and about her willingness to be, you know, so cooperative in the process. And again, the results proved that was pretty extraordinary.
All right, so Kinky Boots, May 12th through the 17th, the spring closing of the season for the Rochester Broadway Theater League. We've bookended it now. Before I get to a short break, it's time to bust Albert on something here. So you're part of this award, really, as a co-producer for Kinky Boots. So you're an award-winning co-producer.
Yes.
But are you a voting member of the Tonys as well?
I am.
How does that work?
I have been for many years. There was a time I was the youngest Tony voting member.
Is that right?
Well, that's some 30 years ago, no, 25 years ago.
But at some point, you were.
You've been
doing this for a long time.
A long time, yeah. The Tony body voting members are made up of full members of the what we call the Broadway League and the American Theater Wing. There's about 800 Tony voters, and I have been one for a long time.
Do you have to recuse yourself with Kinky Boots?
No. But what I do, you need to see every show. And it's hard sometimes because a show will open and close, and if you're not in New York, and I'm there quite a bit. But for instance, if there's a category, let's just say best play, and I've only seen four and not the fifth, then I just won't. You're not supposed to, and I don't.
Yeah, you won't. Okay.
Yeah,
you
I mean it, because it's just not right, you know. But no, I and because of that, and it's what I do. But I get to see many shows every year.
Yeah, and so as we go to break here, apart from even the Rochester Broadway Theater League season, what's the last time you walked into a show with low expectations and were blown away?
I think when I went to see Once, that would be the last time. It's happened to me many times. When I went to see Once in a little theater off Broadway before they moved it to Broadway.
Weren't expecting it?
No, not at all. I remember leaving the theater and texting one of the producers and saying, they had asked me to go see it to get involved. I don't remember the last time my heart, my head, and my soul crossed the stage simultaneously. It just sucked me. I was, you know, almost on stage, metaphorically. But, you know, it just took me. Because I wasn't expecting it. That's happened to me many times, expecting it. I wasn't expecting it on that show.
Is it better when you don't know what to expect?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember the first time it happened to me was Rent. And it was also, ironically and coincidentally, in the very same theater where I saw it Once, when it was at the West Side Theater before it moved to Broadway. And I remember calling the producer saying, you're not only going to win the Tony Award if you move this to Broadway, you're going to win the Pulitzer Prize. And they did. And that's a true story.
Wow. That is a great story. My wife, by the way, before we went to the Book of Mormon last year, said, I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
Uh-huh.
Don't tell me anything more about it. Because she's the kind of person that, I don't know, I'm sort of a digger. I like to kind of, I don't want to give the whole plot away, but I like to know a little bit. She loved to be surprised. She was blown away.
And, oh, okay. So it worked.
Oh, my goodness. I remember at intermission, we had, we were surrounded by some folks who I would describe as older than us. And you never know how they're going to react. And they were laughing so hard, and they just couldn't wait for the second half. And before we even got out of there, I texted a friend and said, because I went in with huge expectations, unlike my wife who didn't know what to expect. I said, it is rare when your expectations are as high as you think they can be, and they are exceeded.
Right.
So that was a pretty nice
I have
experience.
One quick work performance. I had already seen the show, obviously, and I'm on a plane. I'm flying, I don't remember where. And I'm sitting next to an elderly woman. My guess is she's in her late 70s, early 80s. And we start talking about Broadway and theater. And I love theater. And she said, I just saw the best show I've ever seen, the smartest show I've ever seen. I'm thinking, okay, maybe she saw, I don't know. You know. And I said, what'd you see? She said, The Book of Mormon. Whoa. Good for you. Good for them and good for everybody. You know.
Great story. Albert Nocciolino with the Rochester Broadway Theater League. We're talking about the season that kicks off with the Book of Mormon on October 7th and looking down the list at another great season with him and how they chose the shows they did and what's coming to town. If you want to get tickets, Albert, one more time.
They can go to 222-5000 or come to the Auditorium Theater box office or go on Ticketmaster.com.
All right, let's take a short break. We'll come back and talk about Cinderella, Pippin, Annie, Anything Goes, and more here with Albert Nocciolino on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, celebrating 45 years of Led Zeppelin. Can classic rock go with classical music? And what is it about some of the great rock bands that is timeless? Professor John Kovach of the University of Rochester's Institute for Popular Music previews a big Saturday Led Zeppelin event, and we'll mix in some music as well. It's all coming up Thursday on Connections.
450 dollars for a bicycle pump. That's what some cycling ultra-enthusiasts are willing to pay. And the pump manufacturer's new American owner is filling orders.
25 to Switzerland, 40 to England, 5 to Malaysia, 50 to Eurasia.
An Italian classic now made in Indiana. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're talking theater with Albert Nocciolino, who talked about Kinky Boots on Broadway, which is, as we mentioned, coming to Rochester. I'm also curious about whether in person, I want to know if James Earl Jones' voice in person is just as hypnotizing as it is when we hear it in theaters or on screen.
Okay, can I tell this story?
Yes, please do.
So I had the good fortune of being one of the producers of Driving Miss Daisy with James Earl Jones. And we were having a producer's reception after the first preview. So I was introduced to him, and I'm like, you know, this voice can't be this way all the time. So so I introduced myself to him, and he said, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Binghamton, New York. And he's like, that's near Elmira, New York. I started theater in Elmira, New York, with a Jewish lady. She used to have the Straw Hat Circus. I'm not doing a good job. And I'm like, it almost blew. This booming voice came across.
The same exact voice.
Oh, my God. I'm like, whoa. And he was a real guy, you know. But it's the you get what you get with him.
That voice is unbelievable.
I don't know of any other voice like that.
No, it really is remarkable. So I'm not surprised to hear that is his normal talking voice. Though it's interesting, we have a term, and I'm not going to share it on the air here, with what we say in broadcasting for people who put on a radio voice. I got on behind the mic, I'm Evan Dawson, and welcome to Connections. But a lot of people do that.
Of course.
And sometimes people will do that on screen. Interesting that James Earl Jones, that's just,
no, that's him.
Just the voice.
That's him.
Good guy?
Great guy. Great hard worker, loves theater. Back on Broadway now again, and he's terrific.
And it's what's interesting, at least, and you can tell me if this is an accurate assessment. I read so many stories about screen actors who, once they get into theater, really pour their guts into it, and I wonder if it's just because, it's a different dynamic. you really have to be good live in person. You know, you don't get another cut or a take.
It's
you know, it seems to be that, I'm not saying they don't work hard at screen. I'm sure they do. But it's so interesting to hear that when they make that transition, the amount of energy and effort they put into it.
Yeah, there's a credibility, I think, that comes with it as well. If you can do it on stage, I mean, you just nailed it. I mean, you do a movie and it doesn't work, they cut, let's do it again. We'll do half a scene and put it together with the other half later on. You're on stage, you don't get the opportunity to do that. You have to do it. And if you do it well, it's this, I can imagine, extraordinary satisfaction that comes back to you as an actor. And, you know, you look at the landscape on Broadway now. I mean, it's loaded with Glenn Close is back on Broadway. Hugh Jackman's back on Broadway. You know, they're just loaded with the movie stars coming back to Broadway. They love to do it, especially and when they get that recognition that they're good at it, it's just so so satisfying.
Neil Patrick Harris, Hugh Jackman practically lives there now.
Right.
Is he in that Billy Crystal almost for life role of opening the Tonys?
Well, he didn't do it this year because he was nominated and he was in a show. Hugh Jackman did it actually.
Neil or Hugh?
Hugh did the Tonys this year.
Yeah, right. I think Hugh can probably do it for life.
Yeah, Hugh could do it at Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, not this year, the year before. I mean, I remember he was sitting with the dog Sandy from Annie on stage. Do you remember that scene at all? And he was, ad-libbing, and the dog started licking his face, and he said, I'm supposed to be in a relationship. I mean, what? It was beautiful.
Yeah, that is genuine wit.
Right.
Just, unplanned.
Yes.
All right, so let's go down, keep going down the list here.
Okay.
We've got Cinderella. It's coming in December. It's 1 week, 9th through the 14th.
Right. This is the Rodgers and Hammerstein production that was just closing on Broadway. It was in great, great revival. Of course, for those that don't know what Rodgers and Hammerstein did, South Pacific and Sound of Music, but this is a beautiful production. William Ivy Long is the designer who won the Tony Award for this show because of the way he created these costumes, particularly Cinderella's costumes, where she transforms in front of you from being the bad stepdaughter to Cinderella, and the whole show is beautifully constructed that way. And it's the simple story of Cinderella, but with this magic that takes place on stage with the way they've created it. Once again, we don't get the opportunity to have as many family shows as we have this year. Some of that is predetermined for us by what happens on Broadway, but this is during the holiday time, and we think this will be a show that will bring a lot of new faces, new children, and young families to the theater, which is terrific.
You follow it with Pippin, and I think we have a quote on Magic to Do. This is a song from Pippin, so let's listen, and we'll come back and talk about the show if you don't know Pippin.
Join us, leave your filter flower. Join us, leave your cheese to sour. Join us, come and waste an hour or two. Doodly-doo, journey to the spot. Exciting, mystic and exotic.
If you haven't seen Pippin, what's Pippin?
Well, it's like speaking about not having seen Pippin, confession, until I saw this revival on Broadway, one I had never presented because there was never a tour brought to available, and I had never seen a production of Pippin.
Oh, wow.
And, it was first produced 40 years ago with Ben Vereen in the lead role. This is a beautiful, beautiful production directed by Diane Paulus, who directed the most recent revivals of Hair and Porgy and Bess and won Tony Awards, as well as for this show. She's incorporated into the show this acrobatic troupe from Montreal. I can't say it in French, but it's seven fingers is what it means. Seven fingers, one hand or something, which bring a whole different dynamic to the show. And it's just fabulous, just fabulous. And what I love about this show is that, our high school was all. This is one of the most popular shows. You know, you talk to people, say, "Oh, I did Pippin in high school. I did Pippin in high school," but it hasn't been on Broadway in years and years. Hasn't been on the road, and so when I first saw this, I thought, "Wow, this is just fabulous!" And I just can't wait because I think it's the sleeper of the season.
A sleeper of the season. It's coming January 13th through the 18th. All the shows except Book of Mormon are 1 week. Is that
that's
right?
That's correct.
Okay, so Pippin is January 13th through the 18th. A brief plot synopsis?
Of
Pippin?
Oh, Pippin, the young prince trying to find out what his existence is, the journey in life, whether it should be simple or glory, and he finds his way with the circus. I mean, it's the story of this man, young boy trying to figure it all out.
We're going to move to March 10th through the 15th. So this is Annie. Look, if we talk about something, I talk about a classic.
You want to talk about the plot?
Well, let's. If you don't know the plot yet, we'll have a little fun. Let's listen to a clip from Annie.
Santa Claus, what's that? Who's he? No one cares for you.
It's a Hard Knock Life from Annie. Now, you talk about confessions, all right? How about here? I think by law, everybody has to have seen Annie. Right. But for me, it has been years. And I couldn't tell you a very good synopsis of the plot. So just to refresh our minds about, I mean, I know Annie, but give us a sense for what it's all about.
Well, I mean, it takes place in this orphanage, and the Mrs. Hannigan, who is not very nice, and her brother, not very nice to all the little girls, and they went out, and they Annie is the one who's the figures it all out and tries to get out of there, and of course gets adopted, and the rest is history, you know, and they in the middle of it is all these little girls. Singing their hearts out about why they don't want to be in this orphanage, you know. So,
and
that's not doing justice to the story. But,
no, there you go. and the production that's coming here, thoughts on the production, this particular production?
Yeah, this show was just revived on Broadway last season. And it's the original Annie. It's the same Annie that we know and love. Starting the tour just this coming week.
When there are classics and they're sort of revived, is there a risk of straying too far from the original? I mean, everybody's got sort of a different school of thought on what to do with it. What do you generally think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good question. The latitude that you have is, of course, dependent on the creative people or those people who are controlling the creative part of a show and giving them the ability to do that. I think in fairness and with respect, when Annie was revived on Broadway this most recently, they try to change it a little bit, and I'm not so sure that was as willingly accepted. And so when now it's going back on the road, it's going right back to the original story. And then you have, shows like Pippin that are adapted from the original show a little bit, still using the Fosse choreography, but Diane Paulus being able to bring her own work to the show and working beautifully. So I think it depends on who they are and how they do it and what kind of latitude you get.
You've seen some work and some not.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's grab a call. This is Sandra in Canandaigua. I'm so selfishly engrossed in conversation with Albert, I didn't even mention a phone number, but Sandra in Canandaigua is calling. Anyway, I'm glad to have that. So, Sandra, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you. What facilities do you have at the theater for older people who have hearing problems and also perhaps sight problems at the same time? Not totally handicapped, but somewhat handicapped.
So the question is, what facilities do you have for people who have hearing problems or sight problems? Is that the question?
Also, if you have any problems with Alzheimer's.
Have problems with Alzheimer's. Well, unfortunately, the last one is probably is a challenge for everything. But what about some of the other?
Well, let's take the sight one for. And this may not be specific to the question, but we, for instance, because of the number of deaf people who live in this community, we have a signed performance for every one of our shows.
Well, he wouldn't like that.
And we have closed caption performances that we've had in the past.
Okay.
And then we have for hearing, we have the audio, we have the devices for people who just like they do on Broadway who have a problem hearing and that they're welcome to use. And then we have the live captioning as well.
So I know they're doing their best, Sandra, and I hope that helps you, because I know these are great performances.
Where is a good place for us to sit?
Where is a good place to sit?
Yes, with these problems.
Well, I think with these devices that we have available, pretty much anywhere downstairs would work for you.
Yeah, probably get tickets as early as you can and get them in probably in close range of the theater, or I should say the stage, I would think. And good luck, Sandra. I certainly hope that that it can work out for you, because I know they're doing their best to be inclusive.
But we have those hearing devices for them, so.
Very good.
Right.
A few more minutes with Albert Nocciolino. We're talking about the Rochester Broadway Theater League season. It's the M&T Bank Broadway season at RBTL's Auditorium Theater. Anything goes, April 14th through the 19th.
Revived on Broadway, Cole Porter, one of the great classics again. When I saw this show, it was revived on Broadway. Sutton Foster was in the lead. Sutton Foster, who just won Tony Awards for first one for Thrilling Modern Million. I had forgotten, once again, I had seen this show years ago. And there's this dance number in the middle of the show for about 14 minutes, the longest dance routine in the middle of the show, just fabulous. And this takes place on a ship and two couples, and you know the craziness about falling in love with the sailors getting involved, and it's fun, but it's the classic old Broadway musical, one big number after another.
14 minutes.
Yeah,
12
or 14 minutes.
Yeah,
it doesn't end. I mean, you want to go up there and say, can we fall down in my arms? You must be exhausted.
Yeah. We probably underestimate just how in shape some performers have to be, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because they're not just doing a two-hour performance or whatever it is. They're doing it for a week straight.
They take, you know,
or 2 weeks.
These performers take very good care of themselves, and they have to. You know, their bodies and their voices are their instruments, and they to look after themselves.
So let me go down the list for you. If you're just joining us, the Rochester Broadway Theater League season starts October 7th with the Book of Mormon here for 2 weeks. And then the rest of the season is a week at a time. In November, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Cinderella in December, Pippin in January, Annie in March, Anything Goes in April, Kinky Boots in May. Am I missing anything? That's the season. Now, are you allowed to tell us what's on your wish list that you hope to have in future seasons? Because you've, and I don't say this to genuflect, you've already brought, I mean, so many people a year and a half, 2 years ago would have said, if you could just get the Book of Mormon. And now you've gotten it twice.
Right.
Is there anything that's on the list that you're hoping to bring?
Certainly every year on Broadway, we are blessed, for lack of a better word, with quality shows that survive, succeed. And our goal is to always find a way to bring those shows here when they go out on the road. 2 years ago was Kinky Boots and Matilda and Pippin. And, you know, here we are, you know. This past year you have Aladdin and Beautiful and If Then and Cabaret. So eventually those that survive will find their way, and I suspect they'll find their way here.
I was surprised to hear that you had not seen Pippin until recently.
I it's extraordinary. I was embarrassed to admit it.
Is there anything that's on your list now that you can't wait to see that you haven't seen yet?
No.
Right now you've crossed them all off?
Just for whatever reason. I don't know.
Well, because you're either producing, presenting, or voting.
Right, but I mean, it hadn't been revived on Broadway, you know, so I hadn't seen it.
Well, then help guide our listeners who may go to the Rochester season, and then they're going to take a trip to Manhattan for a weekend, and they can see three shows that aren't on the Rochester list. Three great shows that you were helping plan that I could either can be new or revivals. Only three.
That are currently on Broadway.
That you could currently see.
That haven't been here yet?
Well, okay.
Because there's so many that are still there after years that we've already had here. For instance, Phantom and Jersey Boys and Mamma Mia.
How about that's not here in this season?
Okay, that's not here in this season. Well, there is a revival, Les Mis, that we had here a couple of years ago that's on Broadway now that's pretty spectacular. This is hard. That's not on this season. I think one of the most beautiful shows is Matilda, that won the Olivier Award over in London, came now on Broadway, of course, opened the same season as Kinky Boots. In fact, that was a that was a tough year about which show was going to win the Tony Award. Just a beautiful, beautiful show, well constructed, gorgeously designed and directed. There's a new show this season that I think is the Carole King musical, beautiful. I think would really resonate with our patrons.
Carole King.
So it's based on Carole King's life. So that's
there you go.
Of the new shows.
That's good. Three. So Carole King. It's based on her life.
Beautiful.
Brief synopsis of Matilda.
Matilda is the Ronald Dahl's
Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl. Excuse me. Book of Matilda and the little girl who the movie that was with Danny DeVito and whatever, I forgot her name, it was in it, but based on this little girl's got these extraordinary powers and she's goes to school where this headmaster, you know, is very mean to all the kids, and she gets a teacher who falls in love with her because her parents aren't very nice to her, and rest is, you know, the nice part of the story where they get rid of the headmaster and everybody lives happily ever
well,
after.
Matilda may be the answer to this, but the last question for you is, what is the show, in your mind, that is the most surprising success on stage that had to be converted from a book or a movie? What did you say, boy, that'll never work, and you walked out and went, wow.
Oh, man, you're putting me...
Because there's been so many. Lion King, Aladdin.
From a book. You're making me dig. I'm thinking about my favorite show. Certainly, the one that's the most successful is The Lion King. The Lion King. I don't want to say it's a surprise, but what happened with Wicked?
Mm-hmm.
What happened with Wicked? I think not just in New York, but around the world, from a book that really nobody read.
Well, and especially because. With the Wizard of Oz, there's been so many different sort of prequels and sequels and all kinds of things, and Wicked's the one that broke through.
Right, and it wasn't the Wizard of Oz story we know; it was the before Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, right, right.
So I think probably Wicked. Probably Wicked.
Albert, I am so glad that we had a chance to talk at length. You are a tremendous storyteller, and this community is going to really enjoy the season. I'm just amazed that you've got the shows brought back that you have, and thank you for taking the time. Tell us again, if you want tickets, where to go.
You can go to the Auditorium Theater box office or call 222-5000 or Ticketmaster.com, and I want to thank you very much. This was fun.
Great fun. Well, fun. I'm glad you had fun. That's Albert Nocciolino, Rochester Broadway Theater League's M&T Bank 2014-15 season at the Auditorium Theater kicks off on October 7th with The Book of Mormon. Great fun second hour. Thank you for all the participation, our listeners, both hours today. And thanks to Dave Campo, our engineer. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is member-supported public radio.